It's time for the Yvonne Dunnett Show every Monday at 11 a.m. The Yvonne Dunnett Show is a program dedicated to raising the public awareness that will empower the listeners with information, thoughts, and experiences to help them be informed and better advocates for their overall health and well-being. For more information and to sign up for Yvonne's newsletter, visit www.ycdholistichealing.com. And now your host, Yvonne Dunnett.
Good morning. Welcome. I'm so delighted that you're with us on this beautiful fall day with the colors so bright and the sun shining and it being a little brisk out there, helping us all to feel alive and ready to live our day to the fullest. This show, as you know, is sponsored by YCD Holistic Healing, which is located at 1 Prospect Street in Nashua, New Hampshire. YCD Holistic Healing specializes in stress, anxiety, and pain management, pre- and post-surgical anxiety, chronic and acute illness, grief and bereavement support, and customized training and educational programs for adults, adolescents, and children. In the education, training, and retreat facilities, we are very fortunate to have a wonderful collaborative group of professionals who offer excellent programs, workshops, and trainings. Please go to ycdholistichealing.com to learn more about it. And today I have a very special guest with me, Lois Herman. And Lois is a certified National Guild hypnotist, consulting hypnotist since 1995, and has done extensive training in advanced hypnosis techniques, neurolinguistic programming called NLP, and emotional freedom technique. Lois is a retired medical professional who is registered in multiple specialized areas. She has an extensive experience in medical diagnostics, international education, and corporate leadership. As a success coach, Lois is a long-term facilitator for ACIM, conducts motivational presentations and interactive workshops promoting client success. The reason we have Lois here today is she is a recent published author of a hypnosis-based book and has written multiple hypnosis articles. This book, Spirits of Amaskeag, The Wounded Heroes of the Manchester Mills by Lois A. Herman with Peter Paulson, is a book that I encourage you all to read. I found it to be very fascinating and very informative, as well as helping us to realize that it really supports what I keep saying to all of you, and that is we are all who we are because of our history. All of it. The people in our lives, the choices that we make, the experiences that we have, and all of us want to be treated and loved and cared for and respected and cherished for who we are. And even when we pass, those wishes are still the same. And this story, this mystery of a combination of many stories in this book, tells us a part of our history that many of us may not have known, but is the beginning of a truth that needs to be shared so that many souls can be at once in peace. And as we start this show, like we always do, we take the time to connect with our breath, because our breath is the part, like a beautiful conductor is to the symphony. It is what helps us to live our life, and it tells us it is time to be present, to breathe, to live, to enjoy, to love, and to laugh. So let's take a breath, breathing in peace and breathing out calm. And again, breathing in peace and breathing out calm. And one more time, breathing in peace and breathing out calm. And now, Lois, as you may know, I always greet my guests and all of those who are listening with the ancient Sanskrit word namaste. And namaste means, I honor the place in you in which the entire universe dwells. I honor the place in you which is of love, of truth, of light, and of peace. And when you are in that place in you, and I am in that place in me, we are one. Welcome to Healthy Words and Healthy Living. This is Yvonne Dunitz, and my guest today is Lois Herman. So Lois, we have an opportunity to give everybody out there a heads up. I want you to really listen carefully to what we're going to discuss, because some of our elders out there and family members out in our beautiful community may know some information that can help us have a better understanding of what happened and what occurred in our Manchester, New Hampshire communities. So Lois, if you would, tell us, how did this book, Spirits of Amoskaig, The Wounded Heroes of the Manchester Mills, begin? What is it all about?
Thank you, Yvonne. Thank you so much for having me here. And how did it begin? Well, let me see. It began truly about 20 years ago. As you said in my bio, I am a retired medical professional, a very analytical, detail-oriented diagnostician. I was hired by Hewlett-Packard, transplanted up here 20 years ago to lead their education and product development department. So I have patents in my name. I'm a very analytical person. When I moved up here 20 years ago, I'd also been through a very challenging divorce. I had a young daughter that was 7 and a son who was 4. My daughter started talking about a lady that would come and sing to her at night. And I thought, I don't want to ignore her or discount her. She wasn't afraid, but she just kept talking about this lady that would come and sing to her. In a discussion with a new neighbor, she said, that sounds like it could be Judy, the woman that used to live in your house. The man that you're renting from was a very abusive husband to Judy, and her way of escape was to shoot herself in the head in your basement. Whoa, I was very sad, and I also was very concerned, because what does one do with a ghost in the house? So my new neighbor says, not to worry. All you need to do is speak with Agnes, who lives across the street. She is a healer, and she has a priest who comes to stay with her on most weekends, and they can come and bless your house. I thought, great. So I invited them over. We had a lovely dinner, and they agreed that this very much sounded like Judy, because Judy had a daughter when she shot herself that was my daughter's age of 7. Can you imagine?
I can.
Very sad.
Very.
But they got up to leave. I said, aren't you going to bless the house or do something? And they said, you know, we've been praying on this, and it was determined that you need to learn how to do this. And I said, me? I'm not even a really good Catholic. How can I do this? So they gave me a few pointers. And that night, I sat down at the top of a landing of the stairs where there was a locked door. And behind the locked door, I found out, were Judy's belongings still. And adjacent to this locked door was my daughter's bedroom. So I sat outside of the two doors, lit a candle, called for some angels, and said, started talking with Judy and said, this is my daughter. Your daughter is grown now and she's fine, and I'm going to take care of my daughter. So it's time for you to go into the light. I felt some chills, thought, okay, went to bed. I waited a week or two and I asked my daughter, so does the lady still come and sing to you at night? And she said, no, but there's a little boy. And she kept seeing them one after another. And I kept having to learn how to communicate with them in my own simple way and send them into the light. So that started my story, my journey of communicating with spirit. And though I don't see them, I can sense them. And I've learned how to communicate with them, typically through my clients. I went on to learn Reiki first. My son at the time was having migraines, and they said, the doctor said, well, we're going to put him on this drug that might damage his heart. I said, I don't think so. So I learned Reiki from Agnes, mm-hmm. and he would come running and saying, Mommy, put your hands here, take it away. So I was amazed at how it worked, and by his innocent trust. Then I went on to learn hypnosis, and he was having night terrors. I'm thinking back now that he was probably seeing some sort of mean spirit and didn't quite know how to articulate it the way my daughter did. Anyway, I learned to wrap him in the arms of the angels and send him to sleep with his prayers, and he would sleep. Night terrors gone. So I continued on my hypnosis journey, working for Hewlett-Packard, scheduling conference rooms at lunch, helping my peers get over their fear of flying or nail biting or other weird habits and things that disturbed and bothered them. And I knew one day that I would pursue this work full time. So I actually, about 10 or more like 15 years ago, I started a private practice, and it was very spiritual based, and I loved it. And I worked with a lot of people helping with spirit. So I was well known at the time for doing this work. And at that point in time, back in 2003, a woman approached me who was working at an assisted living facility outside of Manchester. And she said, Lois, we need your help. In a 2-year period, my peers and I, the employees, 50 employees had attended 10 funerals. Can you think about this? 10 funerals of their family members. None of the elderly had died. It was only their own family that was dying, and they thought that was very strange. And there were also some major incidents that had happened to them and their family, amputations, hand accidents, all these strange things. So they thought, because I knew how to communicate with spirit, that I could help them. So I set about doing just that. And I did connect with a couple of psychics, because I'm not psychic. I don't claim to be. And one actually had a very long conversation and was shown graphic depictions of what had happened to these spirits. Then I worked with the woman who hired me. She would go into trance. So as a hypnotist, I'm the guide and the protector and the scribe. So she would get the information. I would record it and then complete the journey. I call myself the shipping department. I'm kind of like FedEx. Mm-hmm. I just help when I encounter a spirit, they become my client, and I help them into the light. So I helped around 300 spirits to cross during that period of time. And there was a lead spirit who said, I will take these young souls with me if you promise to write our book, to tell our story, is what he said. And so we promised. I had recorded everything, audio recordings, hand-scribed. I had everything, and really set about trying to write the story at the time. The woman who hired me, within a month, left the employment at this assisted living facility and took a different job. And I would see her through A Course in Miracles. That's what ACIM stands for, A Course in Miracles. And I would say, we need to write the story. No, it's too controversial. No, we shouldn't do that. No, we shouldn't do that. And so the fear and life got in the way, and it all just was set aside for 10 years.
And then?
A little over a year ago, well, fast forward, I started my private practice around 3 years ago in Amherst Hypnosis Center, and just loved working with clients. I did not tell anybody about the spiritual-based work that I do.
And why was that?
Because I was coached by a coach that said that you will lose credibility because so many people are looking for people to help themselves with these different fears and phobias and patterns and habits. And that's, I really wanted to break into the mainstream of society and not pigeonhole myself as just doing the spiritual work. I love the spiritual work. What I found, even by not advertising, is a good 80 to 90% of my clients would have some sort of spiritual experience. Not all of the sessions, but there would typically be one or two where there was spirit, what I call interference, with a passed over loved one, with a spirit that's attached to them. And I just privately would do this work. didn't tell anybody about it, and most often the people who came to me wouldn't say either. It was private, and that's okay. It's very private. And as I said, it's not everyone, but most people have some sort of a spiritual connection, be it they want to actually communicate with an angel, or based on their belief system, it could be Kuan Yin or Jesus, and they're beautiful, beautiful sessions. So there's a lot of spirituality to my sessions, even though I don't advertise. Now, about a year ago, I met this gentleman, an out-of-work business executive, who asked me if I dealt with baggage. And I said, I knew exactly what he was talking about. I said, that's actually my specialty, though I don't advertise it. He came to me and he said, I really need to get my confidence back, to get back into the work market and to get myself out there. And I really could use your services, but I really can't afford to pay your full rate. Yet, I'm told I'm supposed to help you write a book. So here goes my ego. I had thoughts of writing a book of the techniques that I use. I had thoughts of writing a book of some of the stories. I have fascinating stories that would touch other people's hearts. Part of me wants to write a book just on the messages that come from the spiritual messages that come. I take him on as a client, and he's getting better, getting job offers, doing incredibly well. I fell and broke my arm. Just a simple accident in my garden. While I was meditating on my healing, I hear a small voice say, "What about our story? You promised." And I broke into tears. I thought, oh my gosh, that was a promise I made 10 years ago. So I called the woman at the assisted living facility and said, we need to write this story. Her response was, absolutely not. Nope, it's too controversial. I don't want to be involved. I said, please do me then one favor. Call back to the assisted living facility and find out if there have been any deaths or accidents since we did the clearing 10 years ago. She called back. Nothing. So in a 2-year period, there were 16 major incidents, including 10 deaths. 10 years, nothing. My feeling is they kept their word. Now it was my time to keep mine.
And so how did you go about doing that?
Well, Peter was he got a job, he was doing well, and he said, it's my turn now to give back to you. And I didn't tell him about the spirits of Amaskeg, as they came to be known. I just said, okay, after we had done a session with him, I said, let's see what it is that we're supposed to do. So as a hypnotist, I ask very open-ended questions. I'm very careful about never guiding or leading. And so I said, Peter, call from the light someone who was supposed to guide us about the book you're supposed to help me write. Archangel Michael comes through to Peter, and all of a sudden, Peter's getting information about, he takes him into the Manchester Mills and is giving him information about the mills. And when Peter comes out of trance, I said, would you like to know why? And then I told him what we came to find out about these children, mostly children, the ones that I had sent into the light 10 years ago. Their story was that most of us know that during the days of the great mills, that they used children. Children were universally used. I mean, think of Oliver
Throughout
Swift.
The country.
And the world.
Yes.
And they were used because they could crawl into the machines.
They were small.
Small
hands, small bodies.
Yeah.
They could get into places that adults could not.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I found out through the sessions and through my own simple investigation is during that period of time, there were a lot of orphans. You can only imagine, children were used to working on the farms, gathering eggs and milk and cows. So when there were great famines, they would send the children, the teenagers, to work in the mills.
Right, to help raise money for their families and to send it back home.
Exactly.
So children laborers were very little when they all started.
They sure were. And now you've got teenagers that were unsupervised here. Mm-hmm. So you have babies.
Yeah.
And there are many instances of the women, the young girls, trying to have abortions, and they would die. Or they would end up with the babies, and then they couldn't work. So at the time, there were 7 or 8 orphanages in the Manchester area alone. So many of these babies.
So they were feeding the mills. They were the workforce.
They were the... What we have since found out is they were the ones that did the most difficult, most challenging jobs because they didn't have parents. Now, they might have had young girls that still worked in the mills that would visit them at the orphanage, but they weren't like a family.
So they had nobody necessarily that was able to oversee and protect them and be sure that they were safe.
Technically, no. And yet, one of the most profound spirits that came through for us was a spirit by the name of Marie. And she was what I understand would have been a curator of one of the orphanages. And she came through and she was angry. She was so mad because her children kept disappearing and no one would answer her questions. She'd been to the police, been to the supervisors, been to the church, and everybody just said to ignore it. And she, at one point, showed us a story of Samuel.
Why don't you go into that? Is that the perfect story to help people to understand the extent of the book and what you're bringing forward?
Yes, before I go into Samuel's story, what we came to find out was that there was a decree by upper management that if an orphan, if a child was injured in the mills, they were considered expendable. They were taken to the basement, killed, put in barrels, and taken out in the middle of the night and dumped. This is where this activity was happening by the assisted living facility, because this was one of the areas of the burial sites of the children. There were 3 that were identified during the writing of the first book. We have since been shown 2 more. But Samuel's story exemplifies exactly what happened. The parents or the other people would be told that the child just didn't want to work anymore, so they ran off. And so Marie would say, that's so not true. Samuel, for instance, was 17. He'd been working in the mills for almost 10 years and was so proud of the fact that at 18, he was going to move out on his own. He had saved money. He worked so hard and had worked his way up in the ranks. And he was so proud of the fact that he was so adept. He had never been injured until this day. He injures his leg, and 3 of his friends take him to the basement. And he's thinking initially, well, they're going to take care of me, because I couldn't fall into that other fate like so many other people have. I've earned respect. I've done this for so long. And as the day goes on, while he's down there suffering in pain, he realizes that his fate is to die. And then he puts up a struggle. He ends up in a brawl with these three boys. Now he's weakened, and he has a broken leg. And so they end up throwing him in the canal where he drowns.
And what year is this?
This is 1874, somewhere in that time frame, in the 1870s. I'd have to look at the book to see the exact year, but it's that time.
I just want to give our audience an understanding of the time period. And if you're just jumping in, my guest today is Lois Herman, the author with Peter Paulson of Spirits of Amoskake, The Wounded Heroes of the Manchester Mills. So go on. So it's in the 1800s.
Yes.
And he gets hurt and then thrown into the river.
And thrown into the canal. In one of the canals. And what... Where the actual vision started with Peter was that he's seeing this body floating in the canal in the morning. It's early morning, and all the workers are coming in, and some of them look at the body, but they keep on walking. It's as if they know, but nobody does anything to help. That's one of the sad things. Initially, as Peter and I were getting this information, the title of the book was to be The Wounded Children of the Manchester Mills. But what we found out is that this did not only affect the children. It affected everyone in the society, because some of the stories that came through were of the men who were ordered to dump the bodies and how it affected them, this heinous job that they were given to do, how it affected the other workers. They were so afraid of losing their jobs no one would say anything. No one would do anything. They called it the great unspeakable. And yet, what we're shown and we're told, and why we've included pictures, not only from the Manchester Mills, but from the children from all over, is that the Amiskeag was one example, and there are others. There was an interesting gentleman named Lewis Hine, who in the early 1900s, he was a teacher, and he joined a group of people to expose the child labor practices. And he went around posing as a photographer to take pictures of the impressive machinery at these different mills. And he would say, oh, small child, will you stand here so I can get the proportion? And so he would take the picture, and then in being friendly with the child, he would ask their age and how long they'd worked there, and he would strike up a friendship with the child. So he has all of these pictures of these children aging. Some of these were toddlers that were helping their mothers or their sisters, but many of the children were employed at the age of six to work with the bobbins or to crawl underneath and fetch things. And then they did a big expose. And it started the whole practice of child labor awareness. So what I found was I had the flexibility and the freedom to be able to use his pictures in this book. So the pictures, the haunting pictures of these children, just looking into their eyes, you can see what they endured. It, working there at such a young age was a challenge in and of itself. One of the things that Peter experienced, when you're in trance and you're back in a time and place like this, you're smelling, you're hearing, you're sensing everything. The loud clamor of the machines was deafening. You could hardly breathe because of the flecks of lint in the air. And when you look at the pictures, you can see the flecks of lint all over their bodies. And some of the pictures you can see in the beams of light, all of the dust in the air. So you just know that the air quality was poor, the sound quality was poor, everything was very taxing on these children, and yet they had to live with this knowing that if they made a mistake, they were dead. Could you imagine?
So Lois, as you began to discover and become informed by, in a sense, doing some past life regression, was it with Peter?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was with and within that work that you were led to understand more of the story about what happened in the Manchester Mills, in the Amiskeag Mills.
Yes.
What was the most difficult thing that you learned in this whole process? Because this story unfolds in the book from one thing to the other, bringing out some amazing pieces of history and information that obviously have been held tight and have been a secret for many generations.
The most difficult thing for me is that I'm not able to prove a lot of what's in the book. Several things were easily proved. I'm a transplant here. I was not born and raised in Manchester. I'm not familiar with the area. And they talked about St. Mary's Parish on the west side of Manchester. What do I know about that? And I went home and Googled it. Oh, my gosh. That is a dominant church right there. And it was in place at the time of the mills. So
let our audience know, because it's helpful for people, because sometimes it's hard for them to understand the extent of the information that you've been able to highlight in the book and how it really kind of came together as parts of pieces of a puzzle. What did you learn? What did you find out? What were the, you got some very specifics that were given to you. Because let our audience know, because there may be listeners out there that have gone through those times or had relatives that knew these things and have information that might be helpful.
Absolutely. One of the things is these spirits were very informative about who the people were. I would ask, who was responsible? And they would give us names. Some of them were reluctant, again, afraid. But they named names. And that's part of why some people did not want their name associated with the book, because it's controversial. Some of the people, these revered founders of the mills, were the ones, for productivity's sake, had this decree that the children would be slaughtered. They would be killed. They, you know, even with an injury. And so that was heartbreaking for me, and it caused me to want to prove this. So I set about going to St. Marie's Parish and to one of the places that used to be an orphanage, trying to find a box that dates from 1874 that has information from Marie, the curator. She kept notes on all the children that went missing. She kept records, and she kept saying, find the box.
Do you know Marie's last name?
I do not know Marie's last name.
So she worked as a curator in Manchester during what time period?
This would have been 1874.
Okay.
Is the date that she gave us. Oftentimes when they give us the date, their date is, it's oftentimes the date of their death. That's mm-hmm. the date they remember. One of the things that she said is this box may well, it still exists, or she didn't say, but again, imagine, we're dealing with spirits who are telling the story from their perspective of their life and time. And then we're dealing also with the archangels. Gabriel comes through, and Archangel Michael come through. And even Samuel came back through in subsequent sessions, glowing and thanking us for helping his spirit to transition, for listening to his story.
Let's take a moment right here to say, there's some people that might not understand. Some people have heard of angels, and they may not understand or think it's a little woo-woo about the ability to be able to connect with our guides or connect with our angels or connect with a support system that's out there in the universe that is here to help us to know that we're never alone. So can you, in your own words, help people to understand from your perspective, because you mentioned that the angels came forth.
Yes.
Just so that we don't want to unnecessarily make anybody feel uncomfortable out there, but to be able to understand why it is you're referencing it and what is the input that is coming in. Because you've definitely, as you read through the book, there's a guidance that's been provided.
Right.
And it's also come out through the sessions as you were working with Peter and some others. So just so that the audience understands this, explain it, please.
Well, an angel can be defined in many different ways. A lot of my clients will say that their angel is their grandmother. And sure enough, the grandmother comes through and brings loving messages. Who am I to say? I don't really know. I just know that there is loving support available should we ask for it. The Catholic Church and some of the other churches have actually documented hierarchy of angels, and there are what are called archangels that govern larger issues or communities. So we all would say we might have a guardian angel, and many people, their guardian angel, if they have a Native American belief, the energy that comes through could be a bear or a falcon or something within their belief system. I always work within the belief system of my client, but there are guarding energies that help people. One of the things that I have come to learn is they will help in acute situations with death, but for the average thing, they may not be there. They cannot interfere with our free will. But if we ask, then they come through. For instance, I'm not a novel writer or even a novel reader. I've written several technical manuals, and I read How to Garden. I read very different types of personal development books. This entire book was guided. I would say, I feel I need to prove who on the land. How will I do that? The very next day, I would be in a corporate business meeting with a land surveyor who says, oh, Lois, this is all you have to do. Thank you. The whole book was amazing. It was amazing. All the people that were placed on my path.
The synchronicity of it all.
The synchronicity. And all I was doing was asking.
Correct. You were asking. And one of the things that we know, and sometimes it's hard for people to understand that, first of all, love never dies, and it's eternal. And so although our
physical bodies may die, our spiritual light bodies continue on. And so that, the ability, and I know some may not understand or may question a little bit about the communication, but we're not alone in this world, and we do get guidance, and that's that kind of inner knowingness that can be very, very helpful to us. So going to the book.
Yes.
And moving forward in it, is there specific information that you would like the listeners to be able to help provide related to some of the perhaps questions that still need some answers or some information that you'd like to share with them so that they can say, oh, yes, I heard about that. And maybe I can provide you with a little bit of this information because it is kind of a mystery. And it would help, I think, for all of us to understand what may have happened, not only here, it happened in Manchester, but all across our country, and to understand that there are these beautiful souls that are wanting to have some peace.
Exactly.
And wanting the truth to be known so that they can move forward. So tell us your questions.
So if you have heard of stories of people that went missing, we have subsequent information that has come to us, again, through Peter and I are continuing to meet and get information. And one of the pieces that we've been told is sometimes the children would get on trains and head back home because they didn't want to stay here and they would leave. But often people would just disappear. So if you have history of ancestors that worked in and around the times of the great mills and the also small mills, because there were mills all over the country.
So this is 1700s, 1800s, up to 1923? About?
Yes, it was it probably in the mid to late 1800s.
Okay.
Up and through the early 1900s, yes.
Okay.
One of the things that we wanted to do was prove who owned the land, because
of where the Amoskeag Mills are now located?
No, of the assisted living facility where the bodies were located.
Ah.
That was one of the things early on that we said that we were asked to do, is prove who owned the land. So Peter went to the town hall in Nashua and to try and find the research based on the advice given from this land surveyor. He was able to research it back to 1926, where the land had been placed in trust. Couldn't break the information on the trust. I was doing some research and I thought, I thought I figured out who may have owned the land, but I did not want to go out publicly and use my simple knowledge because that's not my area of expertise. Mm-hmm. I hired a title company to research the land. They started in the 1700s and searched it forward and had a lot of frustration. They came to a dead end in 1853, where the land had been placed in trust. Interestingly, Amoskeag Manufacturing Company was incorporated in 1853 and went bankrupt in 1926. So have I proven who owned the land? No, but it's interesting that that land was zoned, was annexed from Goffstown at the same time that Amoskeag Manufacturing Company was incorporated.
So when people read your book, what will they learn?
They will learn of the sadness of the time that we accuse other countries and other nations of doing horrible things. Horrible things happened right here in our backyard and were covered up. And yet, they will also learn that we have come a long way. As I was wrapping up the book, I'm a dancer, so I was watching Dancing with the Stars, mm-hmm. and Noel Galloway, a double amputee who had lost two limbs in Afghanistan, placed third to the Mirabal Trophy for Dancing with the Stars. What that meant to me was it wasn't enough that he was amazing, but that society had rallied around him. Instead of 100 and some years ago, us neglecting and negating people who had been injured as not worthy, now we have come to revere and to support and encourage people who have had injuries, most of us. There are still children who worldwide are being used, that we need to do something to help the children. And it's not just the little children. There's a child in all of us. There are many people who need a helping hand. So if we can look around and see what can we do in our own small way to help other people to, as you said very early on, live, love, and feel like they belong, that would be the powerful message from the book.
And how I understand from the book's proceeds, a portion of it is going to where?
The plan is for a portion of the book's proceeds is to go to help literacy for children. And there are some programs in and around Manchester right there near the mills. The Salvation Army actually has an area right there that we are planning on helping with some literacy programs.
Wonderful. And how may people get your book so that they can purchase your book so that they may read this and get a sense of what was communicated and what happened during that period of New Hampshire's lifetime, yes, as well as in the United States?
The book has its very own website, spiritsofamoskeek.com.
So spirits, yes. S-P-I-R-I-T-S, of Amoskeek, capital A-M-O-S-K-E-A-G.
Perfect.
.com.
Yes.
Okay.
And so you can go there to find out a little bit more. And I would encourage you, if you're a historian and have knowledge of this, please, there's a place on the website for book chat. Go in there and send us a comment. Let us know about what you know, because we don't know everything. And we would like to prove this, and yet at the same time, it is a mystery, and it's a biography of these spirits, of it's their stories. It's not mine, it's their stories.
So interesting enough, as you read the book also, there were people who were indirectly from all walks of life affected by this, and some souls that have lived with this and died with this secret.
Yes.
That were having even difficulty related to that because of wanting to literally unload that truth, unload what it had done, unload this heavy burden.
That's right.
There may be people out there listening that have heard stories or bits and pieces as the years went on from generation to generation. And the real purpose of this book and learning these stories is what? Why do you want to know?
So that people can unburden their stories, so they can tell their stories. It's important. Those secret hidden stories can weigh us down, even in death. Marie, for instance, once we listened to her, once we heard her story, she came back in a subsequent session and was elated, thanking us and blasted into the light. Peter said it was like a rocket. She was so happy to be unburdened. So when people have heavy stories that they carry in their heart, it burdens them in this life and in the transition.
And it's interesting because people, you know, they think of the movie Ghostbusters, right? And so they don't quite understand it all, but they do understand that perhaps that there can be some souls that may stay back or may communicate or may have difficulty moving on.
The movie that I like to equate with is the movie Ghost, because if you remember, Patrick Swayze, playing the part in the role, is murdered, and he goes to go into the light, and the actress Demi Moore, playing the part, says, "Don't you leave me, you blankety blank," and he stays and helps to discover the mystery, solve the mystery of the murder, protects her, and then says goodbye, and sure enough goes beautifully into the light. That's very much what I encounter with helping with these spirits and with helping so many thousands of my clients with this type of work.
And it's a very important component. A lot of people, I know it may be difficult to grasp, but if they can read the book and get a sense of what happened and what you've learned, mm-hmm, and see how these pieces of the puzzle are beginning to all fit, mm-hmm, and that they may, in fact, have some of the other pieces that will be very helpful. And I think that in reading it, the ultimate goal is to help people have peace.
To help people to have peace and to help people to learn to trust. To trust their higher selves, their wise mind, whatever the power that is guiding them.
And to come from a place of truth.
And come from a place of truth and love.
Exactly. So please tell our audience again They can purchase the book where?
Through spiritsofamiskeg.com. And there are two bookstores that are currently selling the book. I have two book signings coming up.
Where are they coming up and when?
Sure. This Sunday at the book seller in Nashua. It's the one that's in the plaza that has Pier 1.
Off of Amherst Street.
Off of Amherst Street at 1 o'clock at the booksellers.
There's a grocery store there, too.
Market Basket.
There you go.
Yeah, right there. And I'll be there. They're having cider, and yeah, they're wonderful.
That's exciting.
And then Toadstool in Milford on November 14th. That's a Saturday afternoon. I'm sorry. It's a Sunday afternoon. That's at 2 o'clock.
And so at that time, when you have the book signing, will you be talking about the book a little bit?
Oh, yes. I'll be answering questions and I'll be signing and whatever questions you have, absolutely.
And if people have any questions now or any information that they can provide for you,
please,
how can they reach you?
Please go to thespiritsofamiskeg.com and enter your comments there. And or you can also reach me through Lois at loisherman.com.
So spirits, S-P-I-R-I-T-S, of Amoskeg, AMOSKEAG.com.
Correct. And then there's also my Amherst Hypnosis Center website. You can, Lois at AmherstHypnosisCenter.com. You can reach me that way as well.
Excellent. And so the book, The Spirits of Amoskeg, The Wonderful Heroes of the Manchester Mills. Now, the cover of the book is really, it really makes you pause because it looks like it went back in time. Right there. You want to tell a little bit about that?
Again, it was guided. One of my dance friends, backing up, I met a photographer at a networking meeting, and she does amazing photographic work, Marcia Vandermeer. And I asked her about replicating one of Lewis Hine's photographs, and she was all excited about it. The little boy is Lincoln. He is one of my dance friend's grandson. And his mother had him looking at the Lewis Hine pictures, and she said, in his world, a bad day is when his iPad doesn't boot up fast enough, and he had all kinds of questions about how the children lived back then. And when he was there for the photo shoot, he was just in this wonderful, he was almost in a trance himself.
He looked like he was a little boy that was right there during
Absolutely.
That time period.
He was amazing.
It was really something. And even the picture of where it was located in the mills.
It was in the basement of one of the mills.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you get a sense that you've been brought back in time.
Yeah.
Just to experience. But his expression and everything else showed the vulnerability and the innocence of the children.
That was taken away.
And a tremendous responsibility that a lot of them had.
Yes.
They really had to do some of these hard jobs where nobody else could get to or into.
And long hours, yes.
So from your perspective, Lois, and all your years of your service and everything else, this book is a culmination of the opportunity to help souls go back into the light and to have peace. But what has it done for you?
The book is somewhat pushing me out into the light as a spirit communicator, which I have not been talking about publicly, but it's putting me out there, and it's been fascinating, the people who are coming forward and saying, you know what, I've been having these experiences, people might think I'm a little nuts, but I think you would get this.
And so that's important to
know,
too.
It is important,
so, because sometimes we don't know where to go, and of course there are mental health issues that can cause people to have a variety of different experiences.
Absolutely, yes.
But what you're talking about is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Some people go into homes and sometimes they feel the energies
yes.
of those who have past lived there and
mm-hmm.
don't know what to do with that. Or sometimes they may sense certain energetic things that are going on and they don't know how to explain it or what to do about it. And so what I hear you saying is, this is part of the work that you're called to do.
Absolutely.
And that you're here to help people if there are questions about anything that they may be experiencing or the want to have further information or somebody that might understand some of the things that are going on for them.
Yes.
That they can contact you.
The other piece of this is children are so open and vulnerable. Children with imaginary friends, children with nightmares. Their chances are they're seeing something that we can't see as adults. and I've helped many children, either individually or through their mother. And it's fascinating work.
To help them have a sense of peace.
Yes, to release whatever the energy is around them so that they can be centered.
So now, centered. At this time of your life, in doing this work, it's helping you now to move forward in a specialty
mm-hmm.
that helps people what? Put it in your words.
As a spiritual hypnotist, I help people to communicate themselves with their passed over loved ones, with their guides, their masters, to find their own inner peace. Again, I'm the guide and the shipping department.
And helping them to resolve anything that may be going on where they're feeling some things that they can't explain.
Exactly.
In housing situations or office
Absolutely.
Situations
yes.
that they have felt perhaps some or experienced some maybe strange or
yes.
Unanswerable situations, that would be a place to be able to go to come to you to be in a safe place
right.
to be able to communicate and to get some understanding.
I'm told from everyone that's read it so far that they can't put it down and they want more.
It's compelling. So there's
Peter
no question
and I are
about
working
it.
On book two already.
It's very compelling. It's very compelling. Well, my guest today was Lois Herman, author of Spirits of Amaskeag, The Wounded Homes of the Manchester Mills. Please go to spiritsofamaskeag.com mm-hmm. to learn more about the book and to be able to purchase it. Please remember to breathe, to live, to love, to laugh, and be present. May the longtime sun shine upon you, all love surround you, and the pure light within you guide your way on. May peace be with you always. May you have a wonderful week, and I look forward to being with you again next Monday from 11 to noon. Take care.